I wonder what Aristotle would think about a society that started defunding scientific institutions. Now Lyceum, now you don't, I guess. If you're like me, you've been losing sleep over how uncertain everything is right now. Will there be a Department of Energy or an Environmental Protection Agency next year? Will the US Treasury default on bond payments and cause a global economic meltdown? What suffering will the bizarre obsessions and greed of those in power inflict on people all over the world? Reading the unending torrent of news and thinking through every possible implication for the future has been paralyzing. Personally, I've found it so overwhelming that I've been leaving my phone at home and heading to the park with my dog and an old book or two to sit and read and think. One such book is very old. Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics was written sometime before the 3rd century BC. A treatise examining what it means to live the good life that has been a tentpole of moral philosophy for more than 2,000 years. Rather than trying to dictate some formula for morality, like thou shalt not kill or maximize total happiness, Aristotle's definition of the good is a humbler sort of thing, a phenomenon we can recognize in the actions of excellent people living together in a flourishing society. Virtue is the keystone of Aristotle's ethics, a golden mean of moderation between unhinged extremes or excess. A virtuous individual is neither cowardly nor foolhardy, neither irritable nor indifferent, not lazy, but not a workaholic either. Identifying and walking that path of moderation resonates with our intrinsic human nature, and if we can manage it, when our lives come to a close, we can look back on them satisfied that we have lived well. Aristotle spends many pages developing a taxonomy of human reason, that multifaceted faculty that allows us to know and pursue virtue, naming several different varieties of thought that must work in harmony for that purpose. Factual knowledge, practical know-how, cleverness, deduction, many abilities have to function to reason properly. But there's one facet of that apparatus he spills a lot of ink over, phronesis, prudence, practical judgment. The capacity to deliberate in uncertain circumstances and identify a sensible course of action. According to Aristotle, phronesis is a hard-won prize of life experience, rather than something that can be taught. He notes that well-respected pre-Socratic eggheads like Thales and Anaxagoras may have been renowned for their intellectual brilliance, showing tremendous proficiency with facts and logic puzzles, but never seemed to marshal all that mental horsepower in service of improving their lives or the lives of others. Brains aplenty, but not enough practice navigating real-life problems to have a sense for how to apply those brains to virtuous ends. Of course, there are numerous activities where a deficit of practical judgment isn't just embarrassing, but disastrous. Doctors, sea captains, and government officials who fail to make reasonable decisions in ambiguous circumstances aren't just ineffective and unvirtuous, they get people killed. Military command is perhaps the most extreme example of phronesis under fire, as one's practical judgment is continually tested against a problem that isn't simply unpredictable, but malevolent, actively sabotaging any attempt to make prudent decisions with potentially enormous cost, an enemy. This is the subject of much reflection in Prussian General Karl von Clausewitz's military treatise On War, which I've also been reading. A book he worked on continuously until his death in 1831, which has had a profound influence on the theory of warfare, and is still taught as a standard text in military training academies around the world. Clausewitz recognized phronesis as the channel through which a general's brilliance is permitted to flow, a channel which he also believes can only be expanded through practice and experience. This type of knowledge cannot be forcibly produced by an apparatus of scientific formulas and mechanics. It can only be gained through a talent for judgment, and by the application of accurate judgment to the observation of man and matter. That's a real bummer for any aspiring generals reading his work, hoping to learn the one weird trick to defeat their enemies. He thinks very little of military theorists who posit immutable laws which, when memorized and regurgitated, will deliver victory in every possible context. But he doesn't think a talented general can just wing it either. Ideally, they'll draw on habits of interpretation, using history and theory to parse the scenario they're acting in, while those actions provide them with feedback and new information that can validate whether their theories really are applicable in this situation, whether some other theories might work better, or if they're navigating totally uncharted territory. He says, Maxims and rules are more to determine the leading outline of the mind's habitual movements than to serve as landmarks indicating the right course of action. From this point of view, it becomes possible to find a satisfactory, that is, a useful theory of warfare, which never clashes with reality and only needs reason to bring it into harmony with action. Those of you who remember episode 198 might hear some strains of the relatively modern branch of philosophy known as pragmatism in Clausewitz's theory about theory. The capital T truth about war, whatever it might be, is unknowable to a general. You are never entitled to certain victory because you outnumber your enemy 3-1 with armored knights on horseback, and theory, experience, and history say that you ought to win. All we really have access to is the empirical feedback from our actions and our subjective sense of whether the results we're seeing are advancing our goals. If your knights are mowed down by longbows or exhausted trying to slog through mud, there's very little use complaining that, according to theory, superior numbers, mobility, and melee power ought to have secured your victory. The truth might be out there somewhere, but all you have is a bunch of dead knights and an indignant sense that you should have won. The Nicomachean Ethics spends many pages extolling the virtue and necessity of phronesis, but ultimately places it subordinate to philosophical wisdom, sophia, a more abstract sort of thinking about eternal transcendent truths, laws like logic or mathematics that supposedly apply to every situation, regardless of context. I suppose it's understandable that a philosopher would rank that sort of thing at the top of the pecking order of human reason. But according to pragmatists, like Clausewitz, even the most rigid laws aren't hidden secrets written into the fabric of the cosmos. They're just ways of thinking about certain phenomena that can be useful in specific contexts and misleading or counterproductive in others, just like theories about who should have won the Battle of Agincourt. One of the great evangelists of pragmatism, John Dewey, suggested that this disagreement was a tragic blunder. Aristotle came nearest to a start on the right path. He acknowledges contingency, but he never surrenders his bias in favor of the fixed, certain, and finished. That is to say, Aristotle, my man, if you stop trying to make everything about math for like 2 seconds, you'd realize it's all about phronesis. After millennia of philosophers searching for those higher truths Aristotle insists are out there, somewhere, Clausewitz and Dewey bite that bullet, saying, practical judgment isn't just a useful tool for figuring out real truths, it's the beginning and end of truth. You can accumulate data and craft theories about what's happening as long as you like, but without using them to solve real-life problems, without testing them to see where they're useful and where they're not, you'll never develop the instinct for how to deploy those theories to achieve your goals, meaning you'll never really know anything. The world is changing rapidly around me, and I've retreated into my library to look for some established wisdom to hold on to. But honestly, it feels like Dewey is calling me out. Love of certainty is a demand for guarantees in advance of action. Ignoring the fact that truth can be bought only by the adventure of experiment, dogmatism turns truth into an insurance company. Fixed ends upon one side and fixed principles, that is, authoritative rules, on the other, are props for a feeling of safety, the refuge of the timid and the means by which the bold prey on the timid. In other words, expecting our world to remain predictable was always a comforting illusion. And now that it's gone, rather than searching for some theory of everything that will tell me what to do and what comes next, I should exercise my phronesis, deliberate, act in a way that seems promising, and carefully watch how the world responds. An intimidating proposition, to be sure, but Aristotle would say, don't be reckless, don't be timid, be brave. Do you find phronesis a useful tool for understanding how to live the good life? What are you doing to both learn and shape the world we inhabit? Please leave a comment below and let me know what you think. Thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to blah, blah, subscribe, blah, share, and don't stop thinking.